Welcome to Software Quality Today, presented by Procellarex. This is a podcast about the trends and challenges of software quality testing and computerized systems validation and the people who are leading the way. We're bringing you interviews from thought leaders within the industry, and today is certainly no exception as we welcome Steve Thompson from ValGenesis in a special Swapcast episode that's going to be published here to Software Quality Today, as well as to the soon-to-be revamped and relaunched podcast from ValGenesis that Steve will be hosting. Steve is a senior director of product marketing at ValGenesis and has worked in the life sciences industry for over two decades in both information technology and quality assurance roles. He's a certified systems auditor and has audited hundreds of companies globally. A published author, a frequent speaker at industry conferences, former PRC SQA board director, editorial advisory board for ISPE, and elite faculty member for Kenex, an adjunct lecturer, Temple University School of Pharmacy RAQA graduate program, he was also honored with an APEX 2020 Award of Excellence for a peer-reviewed article he co-authored for Pharmaceutical Engineering on Blockchain. Currently, in his role at ValGenesis, Steve helps life sciences organizations realize the potential benefits of advanced technologies and inherent risks. Dory and Steve were able to sit down after several days of being in the trenches at a conference to recap what was a great event full of excellent presentations. Presented by Kenex, with the theme of lean validation, implementing CSA and modernizing 21 CFR Part 11, there was a lot of forward thinking and status quo challenging content delivered from excellent thought leaders from across the industry, and Steve and Dory were able to spend some time dissecting the event and some of the content presented around where and how 21 CFR Part 11 fits into the current landscape relative to its inception in 1997, the state of CSV at many organizations, as well as other relevant industry regulatory codes and guidances that come into play both from an FDA perspective as well as their global equivalents. It's clear that even if we put CSA aside, the industry is undergoing a groundswell of change, or certainly there's an increased call for change from those at the forefront. And what two better people to have a conversation and share insights and summarize a content-rich event. So with that, here's your host of Software Quality Today, Dory Gonzalez-Azevedo, and special guest Steve Thompson. Please enjoy.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Dory. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I'm a little exhausted. Are you?
Totally. Great conference. A lot to learn. Oh man, a lot. Yeah.
A lot to do, right?
Yeah.
And so, we're going to kind of recap first. I think the lean validation, implementing CSA, and modernizing 21 CFR Part 11 Kenex conference we just concluded just moments ago here in Philadelphia. Uh-huh. It's nice to see you in person.
Yeah, and great weather. That's
it's
a good
been
thing.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
this,
nice.
Those last 2 days. Yeah. What were some of the key highlights for you the last 2 days?
Well, I gave the presentation and so it was a lot. It was a hard presentation for me because it was covering, you know, Part 11, Annex 11, PIC-S, guidance, standards. And so there was a lot of research involved. But as you know, I mean, I like doing presentations because I learn. And I use ChatGPT to help me with my presentation.
Yep.
And I found out that a funny story, you know about this, I also had this other AI tool to generate a thing on CSA. And to show you that it doesn't really work, it spit out something like the Controlled Substance Act. And so it's a lesson learned. And we could get into like the experience and knowledge and wisdom that we have. You can't believe everything AI says. But it was a great experience and I learned a lot through it. And so, yeah, I was happy to do that presentation. And then you gave one, which was really good. And
yeah, so I did something new and different, and I changed up a couple times before we even started, because what I really valued about this whole last 2 days was everyone came with their A game. All the presenters really kind of not only gave us the basics, but then went one step further in their thoughts and their experiences and how they're working with organizations and what are the things you need to challenge yourself on. So I mixed it up last minute too, because I think this is so evolving, right?
Yeah. The past month or whatever, I was thinking about this earlier. It's like drinking from a fire hydrant, sitting on a chair on the beach with a tidal wave coming. That's what's hitting us with CSA and technology and everything. And I'm like so motivated and amped up with all this stuff and exhausted at the same time. Yeah. But you know, you did in your presentation, what I really liked was the poll everywhere that you did. And one of the fascinating things is I can't get the exact question, but how will you really get leadership to affect change? And the message that came out was a regulatory response or something negative regulatory action, which is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is often the case when I interview folks and go in and do strategic assessments. They don't feel like they would make any change until they got some regulatory finding. That's pretty common. It's like the fear-based approach, right? Don't fix anything if it's not broken,
right.
You know, and we see this. I know you and I were chatting at lunch too. We see a lot of still paper-based programs out there. Leadership not wanting to invest in new technology because, well, we've never had a finding. We never had an issue or, you know, those sorts of mindsets from 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
And if we don't get folks into a system that we start to be able to use and analyze the data, what are we going to do? Those companies are going to be very, very far behind, right?
Yeah. I mean, and if you're still paper-based, I mean, you really got to move fast because everything is moving so fast. Every minute that you're not digitized, you're falling really fast. You are speeding in reverse is essentially what's happening. And like waiting for a regulatory action, we're talking earlier, it's like a kid deciding that they're not going to do something right until they get in trouble, which is not really the way we were raised. So why do we take it in industry now?
Yeah, I don't know. It is a good question. I think most of the folks that come to Connects, right, are line managers, senior directors, but we don't get, we're educating at the grassroots level, which, and that's great. And folks want to do better and they want to feel more added value in their day-to-day jobs, but we're not getting necessarily the leadership buy-in to make significant advancements. They say they want to get to machine learning and AI and advanced technologies within their products or spaces, but it takes a lot of change in order to get there. And I'm not sure that the message is getting heard on both sides, right?
So it's interesting because even in the conference, there were differences of opinion, which is great. I mean, we need to hear those. That's part of critical thinking, which is another whole topic we could talk about. But I heard that some said, oh, no, it has to come from the top down. Others said, no, it has to come from the bottom up. So what do you think?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I really try to instill in training is a dialectical concept of philosophy, right? Having both of those things be true and making meaning in the middle somewhere.
Right.
Right. Because while senior leadership want stockholder investment and continue added value of a company, there's also a reinvestment of resources at the grassroots level in order to get there. Right?
Right.
And so while you want that other thing, you also have to do something down here. And that's hard for folks to have both of those things. Yes, you should be in some ways, quote unquote, fearful of regulatory findings, but that should not bar you from making advancements in innovation.
Exactly right. And even like, I agree with you, it's both approaches, right? So you need buy-in from the bottom up. And then thinking about it, you can't buy anything if you don't have senior level approval.
Yeah.
So it takes, you could have a grassroots to affect change, or you can have senior leadership make a decision and it goes down. But the best way is if you do bottom up, top down at the same time, and then you meet in the middle, right?
Meet in the middle, yeah. I mean, I think, I know you and I have been around for similar, similar time frames here. And, we have folks still on paper, and then we have folks on a very, very advanced test automation framework and yet still doing multiple levels of approval and a very, very laborious process on top of a very robust test automation process. And part of that is because the quality teams haven't kept up with the technology, right? And how to educate quality teams about the new technology, as well as educating the IT teams about the changes of regulations and how they're coming and what does that mean and right. adoption of new ways of doing things.
Well, two interesting things that were mentioned. One was, and it was just recently mentioned, you know, you may have somebody from the business that you've put them down to sign and they're signing off on an IQ that they really don't understand. Is that, I mean, where is the value being added? Or you could have some tech person that is signing off something as a business process that right. they don't necessarily understand. And I believe Mark had mentioned, in his presentation, and I agree. I mean, you can have somebody that authors and then final QA or QA approval. So you can have two signatures, which is adequate. Everybody can right. read and participate right. in meetings and stuff, but the more signatures you have, which is another point, I think Stephen Cook brought it up, was that if you have so many signatures, everybody assumes that everybody else is yeah. really doing it, and they just sign. It's counterproductive.
Yeah. Which speaks to Brandi Stockton's presentation on critical thinking and cognitive biases, and a lot of those very instilled stuff that we've done over the mm-hmm. years just being kind of rote now, right? Yeah. So yeah, so there's like four or five approvers, and so no one reads anything. Does anyone read a requirement these days, or right. just blindly signing, right? Part of I know my consulting and how to do digital validation is getting away from the document-centric stuff,
exactly.
right? Because folks were just signing documents. They weren't reading the requirements, right? So when we moved to digital validation, was really getting down to the entity level of an mm-hmm. individual requirement. What does that mean?
Right.
An individual test, what does that mean? And what excites me around Agile SDLC, right, mm-hmm. is writing user stories where you're incorporating
yes.
everything in one fell swoop, right, so that it's very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What are you going to test? What's the exception criteria? Pass, fail, done.
Exactly right. And true Agile, you
yes.
know? I mean, we hear it mentioned a lot.
Right.
And I know, I mean, full transparency, obviously, I'm with a technology company, and I'm excited what's happening with our stuff and Agile coming out. True Agile, I mean, you know, the user story, Epic's user stories, and then elaborating in the functional and testing at that level
right.
and the sprints and the burn downs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good tools, and we could learn from other industries and what they're doing and leverage the best practices, not live in our own bubble, dealing with the things we made up and the problems we created for ourselves.
Right,
you know?
That we made up, which gets back to our age and the fact that, yeah, we made it up. 1997 came out and we made up stuff to get through because we didn't know what to do,
right?
And so, but a lot of us have been saying the same thing, evolve over time. What is true risk-based? And somehow along the way, I think some of that messages have gotten diluted.
Right.
Maybe not applied well. Perhaps not wanting to have uncomfortable conversations with each other.
Yeah.
Right? Really debating about what is this a high risk, low risk, medium risk, whatever
right.
risk, right? And just getting back to that kind of checklist sort of thing, which we've talked about too, right?
That was a good conversation.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, checklists?
Yeah.
What does that enable, right?
Yeah.
And if you look, we talked a little about the FAA, right? Like, you look at the FAA and they live and die on their checklists
mm-hmm.
because some of those checklists really do matter, but
right.
they actually go through the checklist.
Yeah. And Joanne
Goldberg, yeah.
Yeah, with Medtronic,
mm-hmm.
you know, she gave a really good presentation about the checklist. And the point that she brought up is, yeah, you check the box, but you don't have any context on what that yes meant.
Yeah.
And so there's something more that's needed, you know.
Right.
I mean, there's a time and place for pretty much everything, but, you know, complete reliance upon a checklist alone,
right.
you know, are you really getting value out of that? So, and then circling back, you know, on critical thinking at all, we really have to start thinking
yeah.
and not just doing things by rote because it is burned into, it's almost like some of our procedures are written in stone tablets, you know, that we're following and you can't change it. But a good attribute of a quality system is continuous improvement.
Well, you would think, right? But I know, and I'm sure you have your stories, but there's organizations that say flat out, it's going to take 4 months, 6 months for a change control to go through.
Mm, yeah.
You know, and I don't even know how to respond to that anymore, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a change control should not take 4 to 6 months.
You have a problem that's floating out there for 4 to 6 months.
Right?
Right?
Like, you know, when you're looking at a quality management system, and if that's the time that it's taking for a single point change to
mm-hmm.
occur, what else is taking so long?
Yeah. Seems like an opportunity for improvement.
Interesting, right? So it was great. It was, as always, Cisco is always available and helpful to all of us.
That's excellent. We needed that, right? And it's so much, it's so good to have that buy-in, because that is affecting change, which we need, yep. Which is decades old regulation. And when I was doing the presentation, we all know, like part 11 is vague. And it's only a few pages. And then I compared it to the GAMP and to the mm-hmm. PICAS and to the Annex 11. And then EduQuest, I used some of their information, mm-hmm. which they said that part 11 is thou shalt and Annex 11 is how to. Mm-hmm. And so both of them really work good together. But like back to a point that you just mentioned, it is very vague. Part 11 in and of itself, systems must be validated to ensure, we know the rest of the reg, but it's very short. Yep. And then we made up all the other stuff around it because we had to, because it's like there's the law and now we got to figure out what to do.
Right.
So.
And 25 years later, technology has changed.
Yeah.
Dramatically, right? The applications that most of us are purchasing from software vendors, regardless of whether or not the software vendor is dedicated to the life science space or not, mm-hmm. these are business reputations out there. They're doing their due diligence mm-hmm. to sell a product.
Yeah.
They might not follow the same life cycle management or quality management system that we have as an industry specific, but mm-hmm. they're making money. That is why they're in business, right? And so to put some trust and redefine some of those the customer relationships with those vendors to leverage that stuff,
right?
I know you guys have done a great job of providing your customers with documentation that they can leverage. Other vendors do the same thing. It's changing that relationship to the vendor management. And the last, Carlos did a talk wonderful around what does that look like now?
Right.
It means you need your procurement people. You need your legal people. Like you need your business people to really define what this stuff is and what's important, what's not important, right? It's much more complex. And that relationship building is not a single transaction anymore. It's a continuous conversation. I do a lot of application managed services and represent in that, like the middle part there, right? Because sponsors don't know what they need, and I can help translate between the vendor and the sponsor.
Yeah, right? You brought that point out. Technology and the business don't always speak the same language, and you need a liaison. And you were saying you serve as a liaison, which is great. Yeah. You're multilingual in that respect.
It's a new thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing is that, I know from the past you do women in validation mm-hmm. and you're now even expanding upon that. I have two of my colleagues that attended one of your sessions mm-hmm. and that I think is great because, it's good to empower all people in our industry because we could all learn from each other. So how's that? I'm not going to your meetings.
Yeah, so we're still doing some women leading validation specifically in Connects, but we are expanding to Quality Connects where we're going to, incorporate LGBTQ community, young mm-hmm. emerging scholars, if you will. I don't know mm-hmm. if that's the right term, but, there are pockets of underrepresented groups that we need to help in order to get to the next level. And that helps us all get diversity of thought at the table.
Right.
It helps. I know Binny did her first presentation with Laurent
this great. Time.
And, that is part of my hope mm-hmm. of a legacy is to help impart all my knowledge uh-huh. as much as that is to the next generation. Right. And they have great ideas.
You don't know this, but I had a sidebar conversation and with somebody, I won't call him out by name, and she said how much she appreciated, and I can't remember if you were her idol or her mentor, but she looks up to you.
Oh,
and so anyway, I didn't even tell you that. That's kind of a surprise, but it's good to know that you are making a difference there. And Binny, with the presentation, it was really great. Yeah. And I was telling her how important it is to get the word out and get up there. And because I learn a lot by doing the presentations and coming to these events. And Yeah, it's just a great experience. And meeting people like you.
Yeah,
and, you
know, these... it is. I think it gives us all an opportunity to expand our thoughts, coming with that curiosity mm-hmm. mindset, right? And when we do an event like this, where it's very specific on a topic, we do the Validation University is
right.
broader, and we have a lot of ground to cover and in a short period of time, and we jump around from things to things. But this is a very singular topic, and we went from beginning to end. We were able to also hear everyone mm-hmm. and the context and the story in which we told. And I thought it was really great to be able to have that thread throughout the whole
time. And we met with the architects and Mark from Fresenius. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned about how all of this basically started. And obviously having Cisco here from the FDA, it was really, I mean, we have the founders, the architects of the CSA. And I know Mark, when he gave his presentation, it was excellent because we have the scripted, unscripted, ad hoc, exploratory, mm-hmm. all these tests. And he gave examples of, you know, what those templates can look like and how we're overdoing things. But one thing, I don't know your thought, but one thing that I noticed is some of the questions that were coming up is, well, okay, if it's high risk, then we use scripted. If it's low risk, then we use exploratory. But it's not black and white. That's critical thinking, and it's gray, and we have to figure out.
People don't like the gray, Steve.
But that's...
It makes them uncomfortable.
Right.
So what I try to instill is that we need to be more uncomfortable sitting in that, right? Mm-hmm. We just need to be okay just to say, okay, well, this is high, but we're going to do exploratory because it makes more sense to right. do exploratory in this regard. I think folks are, when we're asked to document our opinion, is the hard part.
Right.
Right? Because, yeah, you're doing a risk assessment, and hopefully folks are doing a risk assessment with a variety of stakeholders, mm-hmm. not a singular stakeholder doing the risk assessment. We want people to have
exactly.
diversity of thought to get the risk assessment, but then to take us to make a claim and say, this is what we think at this point in time, mm-hmm. and therefore we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And oh, by the way, we'd have periodic reviews as part of our process.
Exactly.
And part of that process should be then evaluating and relooking at that risk that we took and then reassessing. That part of the process, for the most part, doesn't get done mm-hmm. well, if at all, right?
And even risk is... risk is something that lives throughout the life of a system. Mm-hmm. Risk is not something that you do at the very beginning to stamp it right. high, medium, and low and forget about it.
Yeah.
And that's another area where, yeah. in general, mm-hmm. as an industry, we really need to understand, because risk today could be different from risk tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Things change.
So the concept of living entities and living parts mm-hmm. of the life cycle. And I know that I try not to use the word documented anymore, right? Because I think that sets in someone's mind mm-hmm. a artifact that is set in time.
Right.
Right. And all of what we're talking, when we talk about this is all life cycle stuff, mm-hmm. right? Whether you want to use the validation life cycle terminology or you want to use system development life, whatever, it's a life cycle.
Exactly.
That implies it is living.
Exactly. Until it's retired.
So, yeah. So all of that being part of the process. And I think it's, those skills, like we talked about, are not necessarily taught in school, mm-hmm. right? So that was the other part. Like, some folks in this industry have come from hard sciences, soft sciences, non-sciences, and this kind of, you know, scientific mindset is needs to get in there.
And somehow. That goes to critical thinking yeah. and bias and stuff that we bring, and we have to be open-minded and humble and... I mean, those are the skills from critical thinking. Again, back to Brandy's, like it's her presentation yeah. on things that we could learn in that respect. Just an open mind. Just, you know, there are differences that we should at least consider. We may not end up following that, but we should right. at least think about it.
Right.
Think, you know, thinking is important, you know.
And most of us do it, but we just, when push comes to shove, is really defending mm-hmm. the action of which we do based on those thoughts, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, again, I want to circle back to Mark. He brought up a point, like a question was raised, not to pick on anybody. This is the way it happens, is that you may do dry runs mm. and then you figure out how to make it work. And then old school, then you write the protocol based upon successful, a series like, I think it was like 10 dry runs as a hypothetical that was used. So you go through 10 dry runs, you think you figured it out, you write the script, and now you run the script formally. Now you've got 11 runs. And then afterward in the hallway, I talked to Mark, I'm like, yeah, and then you get a protocol error. You have to change the protocol, reapprove it. So now you're 12. So that is a lot of unnecessary time and effort when you can do the exploratory ad hoc, you know, just pound away at the system. Right. And then if it is high risk, if it's truly high risk, you got good risk management, then you could zero in on that and test that formally scripted with the right objective evidence.
That it's an actual true defect versus a script error or type. If I see another typographical error from, but we're still doing that. A lot of folks, right?
I mean, that costs money to fix those little typos and a lot of money to reroute that in people's time.
Which doesn't, if we keep doing that cycle, it doesn't get to more exciting things that you and I like to talk about.
Right.
Test automation, machine learning, AI, right? If we're getting bogged down in all of those little material things that don't add up to actual value, we can't get to the exciting stuff.
And it's interesting because if our processes are ineffective and we're bogged down, new systems and technologies aren't being leveraged like they are in other industries, and we're really concerned about patient safety. And what if we're holding things up? Maybe holding the approval of a new, you know, a new drug, a new biologic, a new medical device, maybe holding up that approval or delaying some releases of things could impact the safety because of our own inefficiencies. So it's important for us to be efficient and get the right stuff out there to the people that need it in the right time.
Right. We know quality engineering principles, shifting left, doing things faster, failing forward faster, absolutely produces more effective everything, right? From bottom line dollars to go-to-market strategies to getting to the next new on the market, and which is what all of us are being employed to do.
Right. That's our job.
That's
in one way or another.
Yeah.
And then you know, we're bouncing around. There's just so much. And it, you know, it's exciting, but it's exhausting, but it's fun.
Yeah.
But we had the lunch today and it was great because we were talking about artificial intelligence, machine learning, chat GPT, blockchain, all of this stuff that can be used and also the concerns about using this. So we, and then the news articles, like, you know, the head of the FDA saying that we need to be nimble about it. We got to be careful. Google announcing they're in the game now. But there is fear and there's excitement at the same time. It was a great, I think, a great session at lunch.
Yeah, it is. Because it's very exciting, right? There is. There's the what ifs, how to, for a systems thinker like myself, right? It's just, it makes my mind kind of go, what can we do here, here, and here, right? And there's so much to do, so much opportunity,
right?
Obviously, not every company can go through all those iterations and need to be smart about where to deploy it. Where is the most added value? I do a lot of cost benefit analysis, right? For companies like that is, this is the time, right? There's tons of stuff out there. And where does it make most sense to utilize it? Where do we get the most benefit from that? Where is it going to be the most risk from a regulation perspective?
Exactly.
Or where can it really advance? How cutting edge does a company want to be?
Right.
Right. I still do a talk around, you know, technology adoption. Right. Are you on the laggard or are you not? Right. On the cutting edge. And I think each of these companies are doing their walk around this. Right. Where to incorporate and where not to. To your point earlier around incorporating other industries into life science, get those lessons learned. I know a lot of companies are hiring from AWS or Azure or other industries, finance systems coming in as the IT guys, right? Because they've done it well.
Right. We can learn from them.
We can absolutely learn from them, right? I mean, we are so relying on Face ID on my phone, right? And to do everything to LinkedIn to all of my passwords. But we don't do that in life sciences.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fear of, artificial intelligence, machine learning, but we use it every day.
Yeah.
All our devices, our credit card companies, our everything is, you know, I mean, it's serious, but people know my dog is named Alexa, my cat's name is Siri, right? But it all started because of the devices, and my dog thinks her name's Alexa. But anyway, I mean, we use it all of the time. And the new generation, the new workforce has grown up on technology. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They don't take pens out and write on paper. And to attract talent and bring them into the organization, and we have archaic systems and rigid right. ways, not only can we not attract new talent to bring into the organization and keep our industry going, but we can't even bring folks from other industries like the AWS or whatever, because they're like, why would they step backwards when they can move forward? Yeah. It's dangerous for technology people to step backwards. Right. They have to always be advancing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that for organizations that are not looking to I was always thinking about it from a compliance risk perspective, mm-hmm. but from the workforce perspective, you're spot on. Like, that is a big risk. I know folks want to retain talent, mm-hmm. but if we're not doing that from a technology perspective in some of the most basic ways,
right?
What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, Google announced AI for drug discovery.
Right.
So you've got a big company that can attract talent. So guess what? Now we are competing in our industry with a technology company that's moving into the space, which it's all good, you know, but we all have to be working together to advance.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about, because I know you're super excited about AI and machine learning. What are some of your thoughts? What are some of your predictions?
I predict. I mean, so I've been in computer. That was my formal education, and I've known about artificial intelligence for a long time. I'll give you a simple example, right? Sure. For a long time, artificial intelligence was not capable of understanding this sentence. Now, if I tell you this sentence, you could write it out on a piece of paper, no problem. All of us can do it. And the sentence is, "That's right, Mrs. Wright, I'll write you a letter, all right?" For a long time, AI could not figure that out. It can now. I've tested it out. Mm-hmm. And if you do dictation or whatever, it will do it. So that gets into the natural language processing, NLP. And then we've got the large language models, LLM, which is what ChatGPT relies upon. So these are trillions of records in this neural network that is so complex that it takes a lot. I mean, you could spend $1 billion, which some of these big companies mm-hmm. can do, on developing these large language models. That's why it's so fascinating. Now, the caution is, just like I said with the CSA, and it thought it was Controlled Substance Act versus computer software assurance, there's a lot of learning that needs to happen. And we talked about this at lunch. So we that have been in industry for a long time can bring knowledge and wisdom to the table. And by using the technology, we can teach the systems, because it's machine learning and it's getting better and better. Mm-hmm. So my belief is that we can really affect change and help shape, believe it or not, these large language models and the neural networks to give good information, because ChatGPT is also a great garbage collector. Mm-hmm. And so we have to know what's garbage and what is good, solid information we can take. So there's a lot of learning that has to happen. The other thing is, it's an open system and it's using the data. So companies have to be very careful with intellectual property. They have to be careful with personally identifiable information in clinical trials, you know, personal health information. You don't want that stuff getting out there. So somehow, as an industry, can we figure out our large language model? Can we have encryption? Can we make it a closed system that we can share? And that's when we were talking about blockchain. So mm-hmm. all of these technologies are coming together. It's exciting, but there is the fear that there could be misuse. And we were talking about this as well. A lot of the regulatory action is a result of a catastrophe, like Therac 25. Mm-hmm. And I know Brandy had insights mm-hmm. on that. And then, you know, the thalidomide babies and stuff. So we create stuff and it causes a public health concern, and misuse of algorithms, bias in data, that is the potential for a disaster, possibly a catastrophe. And we have to be aware of that and avoid it, or even breach of information. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand the concerns and proceed with caution. It's a yellow light. It's not a total green. It's not a red. It's a yellow light.
Yeah. And so along those lines of where to apply it, have you seen some examples today?
Yeah. So I'm messing around with it, right? And just for fun, you know, I encourage everybody to go on to chat, OpenAI, ChatGPT, play with it. You saw in my slides, I even generated images through DALL-E, and it's a lot of fun. I use it all the time as a research tool, as a first rough draft. And so I use it to help me jumpstart me on the presentations, and now we'll continue to use it, right? Mm-hmm. It was instrumental in me figuring out PICS, Annex 11, Part 11, you know, GAMP, see all of that, right? Mm-hmm. CSA, it didn't get quite right, but it's new. So I use it. But if you go on there for fun, I said, give me Part 11 requirements. It did a great job. Mm-hmm. I turned around and said, write a test script for one of the requirements, like logging in. Mm-hmm. It did a phenomenal job, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it is able to create drafts of requirements and drafts of test scripts that jumpstart me that I can use. Now, of course, I'm excited because, full transparency, I work for a technology company, and I see the potential of how that can go into the technology and essentially automate. And when I say I think the face of validation will be completely different in 5 years, it is my belief, and doing some test runs, very, very early stage test runs, I believe there is the potential that we could move into validation that takes minutes, not validation that takes months. And if we can do that and get into things like they have continuous process verification and stuff like that. Yeah. If we could get into the full automation, then we've solved our validation problem. Because guess what? If we can validate all the time in minutes, then why not just every change to the system? Why not fire a job off at night to make sure your system is still in a validated state? Yeah.
And that is the ultimate from a test automation perspective, right?
Exactly.
While test automation tools do good, right, you still need a human to build out that scenario, train that system. Like, all of those things still need to be trained, just in the same way like a ChatGPT, right?
Right.
We still need a human to validate, if you will, right?
Yes.
Whether that content that's coming out is good or not, just like you did.
Right.
I think that the acceleration of, you know, in the traditional shift left kind of methodology and getting to test automation, we want to do, you know, you want to get to an ideal of 80% test automation, 20% manual testing. That's kind of like the ideal kind of in a true software development kind of model is, right? But if we can reduce that 20% of manual testing to hybrid, almost automated, manual assisted testing, right? And get to the true content, right?
Exactly.
Get better requirements, get
really,
really clear acceptance criteria, and shift that mental load, right, to added value operations. I think a couple things will happen. One, I think we have a workforce that will be more enjoyable for folks, right? Who wants to be continuously, you know, making sure whether that they have every time, date, stamp applied, right? Another pet peeve around audit trail review, right? Like, you know, those sorts of things. Like, these are automatable tasks that we need to stop doing from an overall industry CSV perspective, right? So we can get to the more meaty stuff.
Well, I mean, this could be controversial to the listeners, but I know that we talked about auditing audit trails, and, you know, obviously I like technology, but to me, it's like, technology is great at data and information, better than human beings. And if you take a human being to really read an audit trail, it's a lot of data. And if I'm doing that, I'm start thinking, you know, what's my dog doing? You know, what am I going to do this week? My mind wanders, and that's human error. And,
absolutely.
And so I can throw technology at it that will look at every bit and every byte. With artificial intelligence, machine learning, it can look at patterns. It could see patterns that I may not even see in the data.
Right.
So it's capable of identifying things. The entire audit trail, all the time.
Right.
So that, you know, I mean, again, it's like, how can we leverage technology and the non-value added stuff that we're really doing, this mundane task? I would rather do something exciting and new and learn and think and, you know, rather than just a rote mundane task over and over again. So I don't mean to offend anybody, but again, it's critical thinking. Let's stop and ask why. And see if there's really value. And yes, I mean, I understand the objective of it, but if we can leverage technology and then do better things that technology can't, which what we as human beings, the knowledge and wisdom can, then let's leverage what we can do best and let technology do what it does best,
yeah.
You know? Partner with technology.
Yeah, it is. And so I think you were mentioning during lunch around the increase in data scientists in the FDA. Were you mentioning that?
I didn't, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, I think when it gets push comes to shove, I mean, there was the amount of algorithms that are coming in to be assessed, right? We really need to have experts, mm-hmm. and then true experts in that kind of structure of data to be able to quote unquote validate again whether or not those are good algorithms.
Yeah, that definitely, like, I mean, I do know, you know, from previous lives that the FDA is really good. I'm sure all the agencies are really good. They could find issues in data that we didn't see if you submit it. And if they kick back your data and it's embarrassing and it's not a good thing if the data gets kicked back, right? So they obviously know statistical. I mean, really, machine learning is statistics. You know, it's linear algebra. I mean, I'm really oversimplifying, but it's curve fitting linear algebra. Statistics is essentially what it is. And they're really, really good at it. And I know they have their center of excellence and, you know, they have teams working on it. But this whole algorithm, and we talked about like in clinical trials, the IRBs and the concept of an algorithm review board being, you know, have an independent group of folks to really look at the algorithms to make sure that we're using the right algorithms and we're using the right data sets without bias. Because again, we could misuse algorithms, use data that's biased, come out with decisions, and then create problems for ourselves. And then by a result of that, now we've affected our ability to use the technology because we've just created a problem. Now we've got to scurry and figure out how to control it to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Right. It's all very exciting. I do. I get very energized when I come to a Connects conference, when we're able to have this dialogue, mm-hmm. And how to carry, what I often come away with is how to carry that momentum, how to continue to inspire folks to do something different, to take the learnings that many of us have and add on and challenge and engage in dialogue around all this stuff. And it's been pretty palpable, actually, the energy in the room this time.
I have never seen the past month or two. I personally have never seen anything. I was on the elevator talking to some random person that was here training nurses at the University of Pennsylvania, and he brought up ChatGPT. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
My friend's husband is using ChatGPT to write love poems to his wife.
That's awesome.
Yeah, everybody's using
it. That's very cool.
I don't know if that's cheating, but anyway.
Well, you know, make it your own afterwards. But I think that is part of it, right? It's experimenting and being that accessible. Also, I think some of the technology historically had not been as accessible mm-hmm. as this, right?
Right?
So now this is really super accessible to common people, right? And so what do you do with it? When I engage with some senior leaders, they have so many ideas, right, to what to do with mm-hmm. it and use cases. And then you need to really figure out what is the right thing to go to market with.
Right.
And that's hard because, you know, the how much money you invest in a go-to-market strategy for a new drug line or whatever, right? It takes a lot, historically in the billions, right, to bring a drug to market where it can't cost that much anymore. We have to do better.
I don't know what the numbers are now, but I think it used to be 10 years and $1 billion to get a drug.
Something like that.
But yeah, it's a lot of money. But I mean, we could leverage the technology appropriately.
Right.
Safely, you know, proceed with caution.
Yeah.
But why not?
We did it during COVID.
Yeah.
Did we not?
Well, and even at lunch, I mean, we're doing presentations next week, and I'll be talking about this again. Now it's my new passion, right? And I, doing the research, came across slides of companies that are already using it in healthcare and also in life sciences, and also things the FDA has already approved using mm-hmm. AI/ML. And I was actually surprised at how much there actually is. So we say our industry is behind, but it's happening.
It's happening, yeah.
And in my slide, in preparation, I put like, will AI or something be used? And then I did the research, and my spoiler, it already
it
is.
It's yeah.
that.
Well, those, again, it gets to the technology adoption curve, right?
Yeah.
You have those forefront thinkers mm-hmm. that are well in advance of the curve, and life sciences in general, on whole, have been toward the mid to laggard yeah. side. And so, within some of the big ones, there might be a division
right.
that is doing emerging technologies, right? And they're always forefront of the mother mm-hmm. Company, right? And that's great. But there are how many new, small emerging technology right. companies out there today?
Thousands.
I think yeah. Some colleague told me around cell and gene therapy, it's like 1,000 companies incorporated in like the last 3 years or something
wow.
like that. It because it's those are so individual ideas in order to get to a therapy, right? But that's enormous.
That's, and you know what? I'm sure the same thing is going to happen with if a company decides not to, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to soon realize that you're falling behind. And so in order to stay current or to catch up,
right.
then the bigger companies will start eating up the companies that have created these
right.
these advanced technologies.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, now we need to buy that company to bring it in
yeah.
to keep up. So
yeah.
I feel you're going to do it one way or another.
So you better get on board. Yeah, you better
That's
get on board.
That's just my thought.
But it's true. I mean, the we do see M&A strategies like galore that are
right.
just popping up and sometimes that is part of those smaller company strategies to begin with, right?
Right.
And they target that. But it is happening. You're absolutely right. And so where do you want to be? Do you want to be in advance or do you want to be falling behind?
Right.
And that's an individual corporation to corporation conversation.
Well, and there's another thing on resistance. And one of the fears is, oh my gosh, this is going to take over my job and I'm going mm-hmm. to be out of work. But there are new jobs being created. There is such a demand right now. And there's this prompt engineers, that this new position that has come up where they're making $400,000 a year if they're prompt engineers to basically help train these generative AI, which ChatGPT is. And there's more. I mean, there's mm-hmm. Bing and others that there's not just ChatGPT
right.
is not the only kid
there's
on the
lot.
Block, right?
Yeah.
And so there are new opportunities that are springing out. You can't keep up with the new opportunities. So do you want to be stuck doing the same thing that you've been doing for so long? Or do you want to advance? It's interesting. It's fun. And,
mm-hmm.
I don't see less. And I mean, in my technology has been kind of been my life. I mean, LIMS systems, they thought, oh my gosh, you
right.
automate the laboratory, we're going to be out of a job. Guess what? It created, still to this day, LIMS
right.
folks are in demand.
Right.
It creates new opportunities.
That's a great point, because all of those systems that we currently use in place need to incorporate some of the stuff in those systems too, right?
Yes.
So while you and I have been in the business for 25 years, we could still probably have another 25 years if we really wanted to, because it's just going to evolve,
yeah.
right? And so whether or not you want to continue to advance those technologies, those specific use cases still are required.
Yes.
Right. And it's just a matter of how to do that differently.
And if you at least stay abreast of the technology, you will become in more demand.
Yeah.
If you stuck in, in the old way, you won't be in as much demand.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of see it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's next? You're going next week, you're doing more talks?
Yeah, we're doing San Diego and San Francisco. We're doing these one, there's just so much happening. We're doing these one-day seminars. And it's not just us. We bring our customers and people from industry in and get a group of people together, give some presentations, have a good time, share ideas like we're doing.
Yep.
And obviously with Kinex, we have things coming up. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Even us as a company, we're partnering up with Kinex to, you know, bring some other things out, and definitely the Kinex conferences. We always see each other. That's how we met. Yeah. And, it's been great. And, So, what's next? I don't know. I'll wake up tomorrow and something, you know, 10,000 new things will be brand new. Yeah. I'm exhausted trying to keep up with this.
So I'll be in Indianapolis next month with Brandy and the ISP GAMP community in the mid Great Lakes chapter. So there'll be an educational day there.
What are you talking
about? I'm not talking, but it's just an education day, right? Okay. Because I think this is the other thing. GAMP came out with the second edition. Right. I think there's still an opportunity to educate on that. Some never knew original GAMP, and so it's kind of introducing that for the first time. But it's also really doubling down on the changes that the GAMP community did, because I think those were timely and important, right? They complement the CSA draft guidance. Right. It complements everything else that's coming out, and we need to leverage that. And so education.
Exactly. You know, I know that we're probably wrapping things up here, but it was funny because in talking about Part 11 and talking Annex 11 calls out cloud computing, GAMP calls out cloud computing, you know why Part 11 doesn't call it out? Because it didn't exist when they wrote it.
We could do a whole nother topic on cloud computing, I'm sure. Well, Steve, thank you so much for wrapping up today with me.
Yeah.
And we're gonna share this podcast on both of our podcasts.
Definitely.
And I'll see you soon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today. If you like what you just heard, we hope you pass along our web address, procellarx.co, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and check us out on LinkedIn at Procellarx. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.